Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be Daf Kuf Ayin Hey Omid Aleph. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar with this system, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Though our Shiur today is primarily Daf Kuf Ayin Hey Omed Aleph, the sugya begins at the lower part of Kuf Ayin Dalet Omid Beis. You will notice about 5 lines from the bottom a slash mark in the middle of the line, following which is found Omar Rav Huna Shchiv Meira. You notice that there is a geometric form at the end of the line surrounding the word Shchiv Meira. We have a diamond form. In the marked Gemara editions known as the Shas Ozer that appears on your screen, we offer explanations and topic headings. In this case, in the outside margin, you notice a word Mivneh. This indicates a structural note, and the diamond is featured there. You have the expression Shchiv Meira, a deathly ill individual, Sheomar. We will have a couple of situations where this is the feature, starting here and continuing on to Kuf Ayin Hey Omed Aleph, other cases of a Shchiv Meira that says something or admits something. We also have another slashed form, slashed underline, that's used over here, in which case you'll see the expression Mona Leploni Biyodi being repeated in the cases that are presented here, where he says Mona Leploni, so-and-so's money is in my hands. In other words, I owe someone money. The topic, no say, Shchiv Meira Sheomar Mona Leploni Biyodi, a deathly ill individual who was anticipating his death, he says that I owe so-and-so money. Aleph O Beis. You notice we've broken down the issue into two sides. Aleph, Haim Ne'emon Na'amin Lo. Should we believe him? In other words, we will then take from his estate that amount of money and pay so-and-so, thereby depriving the heirs of that benefit. Or possibly, Odom Osui Shaloi Lahaspia Es Bonov. Haspia comes from the word sova, being satisfied or full. It may be possible that he doesn't owe that party anything. And why is he saying that he owes this money? He's trying to create an impression that there isn't as much money in his estate as people may think. This is so as to create an impression that his sons aren't going to be coming into a big inheritance. This type of thinking is designed to ward off the ayin hara, the evil eye, or jealous individuals. Let us now begin the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna Shchiv Meira Shehikdish Kol Nechosov. A Shchiv Meira who dedicated all of his property to the temple fund, to the Beis HaMikdash. The Omar, and he also said, Mona Leploni Biyodi, that I owe such and such amount of money to so-and-so. In other words, Mona, $100 I owe to so-and-so. Ne'emon. Rav Huna rules that we will believe this man and will give that $100 to so-and-so, thereby less money going to the Beis HaMikdash. Why is he believed? Chazoka ein odom oisek nunya al hekdish. People have a known status that they do not practice knunya, we'll say foul play or connivory with regard to Hegdish. Namely, even though Hegdish is going to be losing out, it must be because he really, really owes this guy money. Otherwise, since the loss is at the expense of Hegdish, he wouldn't be saying anything other than the truth. Maskif lo Rav Nachman. V'chi od Rav Nachman raises a challenge to Rav Hunam. He says, V'chi odom oisek kenunya al bonav. Would a person practice connivory with regard to his children? In other words, if a person says something that will cause a loss to his children, would he be saying something other than the truth? Well, let's see what the heart of the question is. As we go along, before we do go along, let us note that Maskif lo Rav Nachman is the beginning of a long question. This is demonstrated by the long question marking that you find to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You notice a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line indicating the length of the question, which extends to the second line from the top of Kuf Ayin Hey Omer Aleph. So Rav Nachman asks, if you say that believability is gained by the fact that he's dealing with such a serious topic, and therefore we believe him and give that money to the person that the Shchiv Merah said he owed, so what happens when a person is dealing with his sons? Rav Nachman goes on, the Rabu Shmuel, the Amri Trevayu, Shchiv Merah She'omar, Mono Leploni Biyadi. A deathly ill individual says that I owe so and so this amount of money. Omar Tnu, if this Shchiv Merah, after saying he owes this money, he says, and give it, he orders, issues an explicit instructions, and give the money to so and so. Then noisnim. Then we will give him the money. Loy Omar Tnu. If he doesn't add to his statement Ma'ana Laploni Biyadi, he doesn't add the expression Tnu, which is an instruction, and give it. Then Ein noisnim. We don't give it. We don't believe him, so to speak. Even though he said Ma'ana Laploni Biyadi, even though he said that, we don't give it. So you'll ask, then, why did he say Mono Leploni Biyodi? Alma Odom Osui Shaloi Lehasbia Ezbonav. A person will say things so as to create an impression that his children are not going to be Soveya, are not going to be full or enriched. Therefore, through this Savora of Odom Osui Shaloi Lehasbia Ezbonav, a person will say things that are not totally honest. Hachanami, so too in the case of Rav Huna, when the fellow had dedicated his estate to Hegdish, and then he added Adam Osui, he added Mono Leploni Biyadi, Hachanami Adam Osui Shelo Lehasbia Es Atzmoi. It could be that his statement of Mono Leploni Biyadi was simply to create impression that he owes money to others, so as to create this impression that he is not as wealthy as people think. Therefore, why does Rav Huna say that after the fellow says Mono Leploni Biyadi that we go and pay the man? To answer this question, the Gemara provides a couple of suggestions. We see in the appearance of a triangle here, and we also have an explanation in the outside margin under the Mivne heading. These are tshuvos answers. Lahasbir shitas Rav Huna diomar she hashchiv meirah ne'emon. We're trying to explain Rav Huna's approach that says the shchiv meirah is believed. The Gemara answers, ki ka'oma Rav Huna hasam denokit shtora. The case that Rav Huna was describing, that the Shchiv Merah is believed, that's a case where the Malva, the person who lent the Shchiv Merah the money, is holding a shtar, and the Shchiv Merah is admitting, yes, I owe this money, this man the money. The Gemara then asks, Michlal, the Rav, Ushmuel, are we then to assume that the case of Rav and Shmuel is different, Deloi, Nokit, Shtora, Omar Tnu Noisnim? is it then going to be true that what Rav Shmuel said, that if he says, if the Shimra says, give the money, then the heirs will be expected to give, and there's no shtar, milva al pehu, then if anything, it's at maximum, it's an oral debt. The Rav Shmuel Dami Travaihu, they, Rav and Shmuel themselves, have been known to say, milva al peh einoi goive, loi min hayorshim v'lo min halakuchos. Oral debts are not to be collected from the heirs. So, if you follow the first answer to explain Rav Huna that was provided in this triangle, we'll then run into a difficulty in understanding Rav Shmuel. Elo Omar Rav Nachman. Edi v'edi. Whether you're talking about Rav Huna's case or the din of Rav and Shmuel, denokit shtara biyodei. We're talking about a case that the fellow said to to whom the money was owed is holding a shtar. Velo kashya. And even so, there is no inconsistency. There's no question to be raised. Ha demekuyam, the case of Rav Huna that indicated we will collect from Hekdish, so to speak, in other words, that we will pay the money that the Shemira said he owed, is a case where the fellow to whom the money was owed is holding a verified shtar. That's a mekuyam, a shtar that has a court certification in it, a henpek, it's known as. Ha, the din of Rav Shmuel, the lo mekuyam. The case of Rav and Shmuel is where the shtar that the Ploni is holding on to, it has not been court verified. Therefore, Omar Tenu, Kaimei L'shtore, if the Shchivmera adds the instructions and pay so-and-so, the Shchivmera, who is the Lova, says and pay so-and-so, Kaimei L'shtore, that is itself a verification. And the Malve, the lender, won't have to verify it any further and will be able to collect. However, Beis Lo Omar Tenu, if the Shchivmera did not say and give the money, then Lo Kaimei L'shtore, then we don't have a verification of the shtar. And under such circumstances, the Rashbam adds, then we are choshesh that maybe what he said was so as to not create the impression of wealth, and no further collection can be made until that shtar is verified independently. Omar Rabo, Shchiv Mera Shomar. Notice we have again the diamond featured, and we have a Roman numeral number 2, indicating the second example, the second case of a Shchiv Mera saying Mona Leploni Biyodi. When we opened the sukya today with Rav Huna's din in the space between the Gemara and the Rabbeinu Gershom and the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text on the bottom of the previous other, you noticed a Roman numeral number 1. So, Rabba, who is the second case, Omar Rabba, Shchiv Mera Shomar, Mono Leploni Biyodi, the deathly ill individual says, I owe someone $100. The Omar Yisoymim and the orphans say, Poranu Ne'emonim. This also was case number 1. We have a little number 1 with a house form over it, surrounding the 1 at the end of the line. This is the first din under Rabba's heading. The number 2 din is Tnu Mona Leploni, where the Shchiv Mera says, instead of just saying Mona Leploni Biyodi, he says, I give, he adds an instruction, a direction that they should pay the $100 to so-and-so. The Omru Yisoymen Parano, and the Yisoymen said, we paid it up. Ein Ne'emonim. So they're not believed. The Gemara asks a question. This is a long question. Once again, you see the encircled kuf with a vertical dashed line lasting 5 lines. Klape Laya, where are you going? Ibcho Mistabro, the opposite is more likely. Omar Tnu Mona, in the event that the Shechiv Mira says, give the 100 to so-and-so, Kevan de Poska Avuhan Lemilsa, since the father is speaking with a degree of certainty, he's Poska Avuhan Lemilsa, he's speaking with certainty and with an order, give the money to so-and-so, Iko Lemeimar de Pare. It's most likely that they, the orphans, paid it up, as Rabbeinu Gershom says, to fulfill tzavuas aviyam, to fulfill their father's command. There was a command here, tenu. However, mono leploni biyodi, if the father simply said, I owe so-and-so 100, kevan delo posak avon lemilso, since the father didn't issue a direct order, yiko lemeimar, dolo pare, there is reason to think that they did not, that it was not paid up. Elo, I itmar hochi itmar. So we now have a restatement of Rabbo's original halacha. We've marked this by showing you a squiggle underline, I itmar hochi itmar. Very often in the marking system we employ the squiggle underline. In addition to simple emphasis, we use it to show where the Gemara is making a change or offering an alternative explanation. You can also see the little bays in the space immediately to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. This bays indicates the second version of Rabbah's statement. The Aleph appeared when Rabbah opened up. So how should we understand Rabbah? Thusly, he must have said, Shchiv Mira She'omar. 1. Mono Leploni Biyodi. The Omru Yisomim, and then the Yisomim told us afterwards, Chozar vi Omar Lonu Abba Porati, that after father said, I owe so and so 100, father then told us, I paid it up. Ne'emonim, they're believed. My taimo, why is this story believable? Adkure Midkar. Literally, he recalled, Adkure from the word Lizkor, the Dalid, interchanging with the Hebrew Zion, he remembered. In other words, the Shchiv Mira remembered afterwards that he already paid. So from the Rabbeinu Gershom, it appears that what was taking place here is the Shchiv Mira never said tenu. It must be that he was in a state of doubt. So he originally said, I owe so-and-so 100. And then he recalled that he already paid it up. Hence, he never used the word tenu, the instruction to pay it up. Because he must have suspected that he might have, in fact, paid it up. And therefore, when they confirm our suspicions by saying, and then father said to us he did pay, we believe them. However, tenu mono leploni, where the Shchiv Mira made a direct order and said, pay so-and-so the $100. The Omru Yisomim, and then the orphans told us, Chozar V'Omar Abba Parati, father then retracted and said he paid it up. Einem on him. They're not believed. De in Isa de Pare, if it were so that the father really paid up the lender, Lo Havi Omar Tenu, he wouldn't have said at any point the instruction, go and pay. So, by the fact that he said, go and pay, it must be that he reviewed very carefully in his mind and achieved absolute certainty that he had not paid. Therefore, when they tell us that father retracted and said he paid, under these circumstances, they're not believed. Boi Rova. Shchiv Mira Shehoide Mahu. Let us glance at the Rashbam. Shchiv Mira Shehoide Baal Choivoy Toy Ein Lo. A lender, someone to whom the Shchiv Mira owes money, comes with the claim on a li biyodcha. My money is in your hands. In other words, you owe me money. The Omar loy hein. Yes, I do. The chihai gavno amrinam a Sanhedrin per gzeh borer. Under circumstances like this, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the third perek, says that tzorich shioimar atem aedai. The borrower who admits has to add, if their witness is present, has to add, you are my witnesses. So that makes it an official confession or admission to the debt. The Elo, if he doesn't instruct the bystanders and nominate them as, appoint them as my witnesses by saying Atem Aidi. If he doesn't say that, Motzi Omar Lei, this borrower can turn around at a later point and say, oh, yeah, right, I admit it to you, but Mishatani Boch, I was just kidding around. Mishata from the word Shoita, being foolish, I was fooling with you. So Rava raises the question, what happens if the person who's admitting is a Shchivmera? Shchivmera Shehoide Mahu. Now, the Gemara presents two sides to the question. This is the Oi, this is Aleph, you notice, and then the next line, Oi, squiggle underline, or possibly Beis. Two sides. Do we say, Tzorech Loimar Etem Aidai? Does the Shchivmera have to, in order to confirm the seriousness of his confession or of his admission, is that accomplished only if he says Atem Eidai? Oi, Ein Tzorech Loimar Atem Eidai. Or is it possible that he does not need to say Atem Eidai because he's a Shchiv Meira and he's probably not kidding around at this point in his life that's coming to an end? The Gemara, we skip this bracketed section and we'll insert it later. Odom Mishate Bishas Misa. Oy Ein Odom Mishate Bishas Misa. Does a person fool around at the doorstep of death? Or no? Or maybe the threat of the impending death is so overwhelming that finally a person stops his life of kidding around? And now the Girsa says to insert the following new question under the issue of Shchiv Meira. Tzorech sheyoymar ksoivu, oy ein tzorech loymar ksoivu. The Rashbam, tzorech sheyoymar ksoivu, di amrino becheskes abatin. The Gemara in this parak, in the third parak of this Maseches, hoy do'o befnei shnayim, when someone admits owing money in front of two, Tzorech Shiyomar Ksovu, if there's any thought of the debt turning into a written debt, a milva bishtar, that will take place only if there's an instruction to that says, write it, that the two people that are present are instructed to write it. What is the din with the Shchiv Meira? Bosor Debaya, Hodor Pashta, after the question was raised, Rava raised the question, he then resolved it. The two questions were the Atem Eidai issue, does a person fool around at the throes of death, and the issue of the Shchiv Meira needing to say Ksovu or possibly not needing to say it. Aleph, Ein Odom Mishate Bishas Misa. A person does not fool around at the point of death. Instead of referring this as Aleph, we'll refer to it as number one, in order to correspond to the number one that we saw at the diamond when Rava initially asked the question. That was the first question. And then we have the number two corresponding to the second question that we have in the brackets here because of the corrected girsa. So here we have number one, Ein Odom Mishate Bishasmi. So this corresponds, as we said, to question number one. And the resolution is, a person will not fool around at the point of death. And therefore, when he says, I owe so-and-so money, and two witnesses are there, they will be able to serve as witnesses, and there's no further claim later on of, well, he was just fooling around. And number two, V'divrei Shchiv Meira K'ksuvin U'chemesurin Domo. The words of the Shchiv Meira are as if they're written and transferred. Namely, there's no need to say Ksovu. Hamalves Chavero. Aleph, Bishtar. A loan took place within in a written form, with a document attesting to this loan. Goivim in a chosim eshubodim. The lender will have a right to collect from purchasers, from the written loan, with witnesses signing such a document creates a coil and therefore serves notice to the public that this man has now borrowed money and become indebted to this particular lender, and this debt creates a lien on all of his property, and any property that's sold from this point onwards is called Meshubad, and hence the lender will have a right to collect from those subsequent purchasers. However, al yaday edim, if the loan took place in the presence of witnesses, but not written down, merely in their presence, goyve minechasim b'nei chorin, then the lender would have a right to collect only from the borrower's currently held properties, and not properties that he may subsequently sell. If he does subsequently sell, so this lender won't be able to turn to the purchasers. He'll be able to turn only to the borrower himself and seek those properties that he holds at the time the lender is trying to collect his debt. Hoitzi olov ksav yodoi shehu chayav lo. If the lender pulls out a document that has no witnesses signed upon it, merely the borrower's signature appears at the bottom. This is a situation we've discussed in earlier Gemaras, a situation where a piece of paper says, I, the undersigned, owes so-and-so money. And this malve pulls out such a document. As far as from what properties is he able to collect, goyve minuchasim b'nei chorin. The lender will be able to collect only from those properties that the borrower is holding and not those that were sold. Orev hayoytze la'achar chisum shtorois. This is a situation where a guarantor signed a document of debt underneath the witnesses that serve as testimony to the debt, under their names, the two witnesses that signed the basic shtar, a guarantor signs saying, I so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, is an orev. Gorev goive minechosim b'nei chorin. The ultimate collection from the orev's properties will be only from those that he holds, not from those that are sold. This will be true in the case of an orev that offers to guarantee payment of a debt that offered his services to pay up the loan, even if his name does not appear in the shtar, but rather a loan was extended and then someone comes along and says to the malve, I saw you loaned so-and-so money, don't worry, if he doesn't pay up, I'll pay up for you. Ma'isebol ifnei Rabbi Yishmael v'yomar goyve minechosim b'nei chorin. The orev will be bound to make good on that loan if need be, but only from the orev's held properties and not from those that he may have sold. The Rashbam across from here says, goyve minechosim b'nei chorin min ha'orev be'arvus shebe'al peh. A guarantee that was made orally binds the orev, but only to the extent that the orev's held properties can be collected from and not those that he sold. Demilva al pehi. The orev's guarantee is viewed as an oral debt. Kevon delo chasimi edim al ho'arvus. Since there are no witnesses that signed on his guaranteeship. In other words, as we saw before, the guarantor signed the document under the witnesses, so that when the witnesses sold, there was no guarantor in the picture. Therefore, this is called a milva al peh. V'adin la'orev below shtar achar mat mois. And this is true as well in the case of a guarantor that doesn't sign on a document. A guarantor who showed up on the scene after the initial loan was extended. Rabbi Shmuel therefore says that such guarantors are bound, but only from their held properties and not from subsequent sold properties. Amar lo ben Nanos. Ben Nanos rejects Rabbi Shmuel and says, Einoi goyve lo minechosim mishubodim v'lo minechosim b'nei chorin. A guarantor that appears after the loan was extended is not bound at all. Omar loi lama. Rabbi Shmuel asks, why not? Omar loi. So Benanos offers an analogy. Hare hachinek es echod bashuk. Imagine someone attacks someone else in public, in the market. Umotsoi chavero, and someone passes by and sees the victim being strangled. The omar loi, and the passerby says, hanach loi vani etein loch. Leave him alone and I'll pay you. Then the attacker leaves him alone. Apparently, we can surmise from this story a possible scenario, and that is that the attacker was trying to get money that was owed to him by the victim. The passerby says, oh, he owes you money, don't worry, I'll pay up your debt. Potter, the passerby is exempt. He is not bound at all. Shaloi al emunasoi hilveu. The initial loan was not made trusting this passerby. The initial loan was made anyway, without any regard to the passerby. Hence, the passerby has no obligation to make good on the loan. Once again, the loan was made without him in mind whatsoever. As the Mishnah says, Shalo al emunoso hilveu. Elo, ezu hu orev shuhaif. So what kind of orev is bound? The following, where a guarantor says before the loan ever takes place, he says to the lender, Hilveu, extend money to the borrower, Vani no seinoch, and I'll make good on it. Chayov. That case, in such a case, the guarantor will be bound to make good on it, Shekein al emunosoi Hilveu, because in that case, the whole loan was extended based on the trust upon this orev, upon this guarantor. The Omer Rabbi Shmuel. Horoitze sheyachkim yasok bedine momenes. One who wants to increase his wisdom, to exercise his brain, so to speak, then he should involve himself with halachas concerning finances. Dine momenes. She'ein lecho miktsoya b'torah gadol mehem. There's no area of Torah that is more expansive than them. Vehein kema'ayon hanoveya. They are like a flowing spring. The imagery being something that's always new approaches are bubbling forth. Hence, being grounds or reason for expansion of wisdom. V'roitze shiasot bedine momenis. After saying that a person who wants to increase wisdom, he should be oisek, he should be preoccupied with dine momenes. He now says a second point, so one who wants to involve himself with dine momenes, yishamish as Shimon ben Nanos. He should learn, or serve, literally serve, Shimon ben Nanos. We would say be in his company when Rav Shimon ben Nanos, who we saw earlier in this Mishnah, was involved in learning and paskening on Dine Momenus. Being in his company, one will have the maximum chances of growth. Let us glance to the outside margin of our Gemara and see what the topic heading is. Nosei Kloli, we have a general topic, and we've indicated that this general topic extends to Daf Kuf Ayin Vov. Shibuda d'oraisa oy d'rabbanan. This concept of shibud, which we may translate as property liens, where when someone incurs a debt, we say that his properties are bound to the debt as well. If that be the case, then we say that if the properties are transferred to someone else's possession after the debt was incurred, collection can be made from those properties. This concept of shibuda, is it a Torah concept, d'oraisa oy d'rabbanan, or is it a rabbinic enactment? Two other factors that we're going to deal with, milva b'shtar versus alpeh, a written debt versus an oral debt. As we open up the Gemara, we'll notice a diamond, and we've indicated this under our mivneh structural note. We will see machloikas ula v'rabo. So if you glance in the Gemara, you see ula and then rabo featured in diamonds. We will also see that their statements, each one will last several lines, as is indicated by the long marking in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, Ula is featured, and then Rabba. We've also double underlined, which is one of our additional series markings, the expression Devar Torah, which at which point we'll define what is the case at the Torah level, at the Doraisa level. And we also will be using the volcano form to enclose the expression Shibudo Doraisa, or possibly Shibudo Lav Doraisa, meaning it is the Rabbonan. Omar Ula, Devar Torah, Echad Milva Beshtar, Echad Milva Alpe, Goive Minichosim Ishu Abadim. According to Ula, even when you're dealing with the Torah level of matters, on the Doraisa level, not only is a written debt able to collect from sold properties, from Minichosim Ishu Abadim, but even oral debts can collect, lenders can collect from those sold properties. My time, Shibudo Doraisa. Why is this the case? We say, Ula will tell you, because Shibudo, that the fact that a person's properties are bound to his debts, is a Torah concept. So why has it been taught? Why is it known that oral agreements collect only from those properties held by the debtor, by the borrower at the time of collection, and you cannot turn for collection of oral agreements to purchasers? Mishum pseida delikuchos, because we're afraid, we're fearful of causing their loss, the purchaser's loss. Ihachi milva b'shtar nami. If that be the case, so in fear of causing the purchaser's loss, why do we allow written debts to be collected from them? The Gemara answers, Hosam inhu ninhu da'afsidu anapshayu. In the case of written debts, namely loans that took place and other types of financial arrangements, we'll use loans as an example, loans that took place that in a written form and witnesses signed upon them, the witnesses signing the written loan creates public awareness that this person owes money. So when someone comes along afterwards and buys property from him, he is endangering himself, he's causing his own loss, so to speak. This is as opposed to a case of an oral loan where there was no document prepared with witnesses signing it, there was no public awareness created. And hence, a person in innocence, so to speak, bought land from this man, from this borrower, not knowing ahead of time that he owed money. Hence, we employ this concept of Mishum Pseida Lukuchos, this protection arrangement whereby we do not collect from his properties, from purchased properties. V'rovo omar devar Torah, echod milve b'shtar ve'echod milve alpe, einoy goive elo minechosim b'nechorin. Rabo disagrees with Ula, and you can see that both of the shitas are pitted off against each other by the diamonds. Rabo says that on a Torah level, even a milve b'shtar, and certainly a milve alpe, can collect only from Nechosim b'nei Chorin. Those are properties that the borrower is holding at the time of the collection. My taima, why is the power of collection limited? Shibudo lav do'iraisa. Because this concept of property lien is not a Torah concept. It is a rabbinic institution. So then, what is the reason the Rabbonon said that documents that ascertain a loan having taken place, namely a loan written in a document and signed by witnesses, is able to collect from those people who purchased from the borrower subsequent to the loan? Kedei shalotinol delis bifnei lovin. Literally, this means so as to guarantee a situation that the doors will not be locked in front of borrowers. In other words, people seeking loans will not be able to acquire a loan if the lenders don't have a sense of security that their loans will be paid back. So as to increase their feeling of security, we tell the world of potential lenders that this fellow who's borrowing from you, not only does he owe you money, but you will gain a lien on all of the borrower's properties, so that in the event that he sells the properties to others subsequent to the loan you extend to him, you will be able to collect from those purchasers. With that, we'll be able to keep the door open, so to speak, in front of all those seeking loans. If that be the case, if there be interest in us in making sure that loan money is available to borrowers, so let the same rule be true in the case of oral loans, that they should be able to collect from Nechasa Mishubadim. The Gemara answers, Hasam les le kola. In the case of oral loans, there is no public awareness. Kol means literally voice or sound. There is no public awareness created, and hence it would be unfair to jeopardize the subsequent purchasers and have the loan be collected from them as well. Gemara asks, Umi Omar Rabba Hochi? Could it be that Rabba said that Shibuda is Lav Doraisa? Veha Omar Rabba, but we know Rabba to say in another context. We have to give a little bit of background before we continue in the Gemara. In the case that a person died, a person who had loaned money to others passed away, leaving several children, several sons as heirs. Amongst his sons is a firstborn. In general, a firstborn is entitled to pishnayim, two portions of the estate that's left. The rule of pishnayim, that a firstborn is entitled to a double portion in the estate, is true with regard to portions that are held by the father at the time of his passing. Properties or wealth that the father is only in anticipation of receiving, but he's not currently at the point of death holding it, those kind of properties, anticipated properties, which is known as ro'ui, are divided equally amongst all of the children, and the firstborn does not get a pishnayim. What is the case with regard to debts that were owed to the father? So Rabba is reported as having said as follows, that if the debt that was owed to the father is collected in the form of land, then the Bechor gets Pi Shnayim. So you'll ask, but the father at the point of death had not yet collected the land. So the logic over here says that since land is collected, this land that's being collected is land that on which a lien had been established in the father's lifetime at the point he extended the loan. If that be the case, it is viewed as if the property is already in the possession of the father. Namely, at the point he extended the loan, the father is already considered a type of owner of that land. Hence, even if he didn't physically collect it or take possession of it, nevertheless, the Bechor would be entitled to Pishnayim. On the other hand, if the collection is made in cash, according to Rabba, then there's no pishnai, because that is viewed as simply anticipated wealth as opposed to held wealth, held at the time of the father's death. What do we see, however, from Rabba? We see that the pishnayim allocation, which is a Torah allocation, a Torah allotment to the firstborn, is the pishnayim form of collection is done by the Bechor in the case of a karka collection. That shows us that Shibuda, according to Rabba, must be Doraisa. Let's continue in the Gemara. Omar, we're asking a question. The question lasts a couple of lines, as it's indicated by the length marker to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. V'ho Omar Rabba, Govu Karka, Yeshlo, if a firstborn collects with his brothers, their father's owed debts. They collect land. Yeshlo, the Bihar gets Pishnayim. Gavu Mo'os Eimlo, if they collected cash, so then the Bihar does not get Pishnayim. So you see from this that Rabbah must hold that Shibuda is the Raisa. Otherwise, why would the Bihar be entitled to a double portion? The Chitema Epuch de Rabbah Le'ula U'de'ula Le'Rabbah. You might suggest, then maybe we should switch around the Shitas and then have Ula coming out saying that Shibuda is not the Raisa. But that also is not plausible. The Ho Amar Ula, Devar Torah, Baal Choiv, Dine Beziburis. Ula has been heard to say that from a Torah perspective, a lender has rights to collect only the poorest quality property that is possessed, that was in the possession of the borrower. For our purposes, without getting into the details of different property qualities, what we are emphasizing, and we do that with the markings, notice the Var Torah, we've slashed underlined that. That indicates that Ula also holds that Shibuda is Doraisa. So we see not only Rabba in the case of Bechor, Goyva Pishnayim from Karka, that Rabba holds Shibuda Doraisa, but Ula also seems to hold Shibuda Doraisa. The Gemara answers as follows. Rabba, personally speaking, holds Shibuda is not Doraisa. The issue concerning the Bechor getting Pishnayim, that was Rabba explaining the Shita of the B'nai Ma'arova, someone else's Shita he was explaining, but that's not his personal Shita. Rabba, the Gemara says, Taimo de B'nai Ma'arova Ka'amar, he was explaining someone else's Shita. This sugya, by the way, was covered in this Maseches in Bava Basra earlier on. Rabba, therefore, was explaining B'nai Ma'arova, V'lei lo svirolei, but he himself doesn't hold from that. Rather, Rabba holds that the Baal Chov min haTorah, that the lender on a Torah level collects only from B'nai Chorin, even a Milva B'shtar. And as far as the Bechor is concerned, Rabba would hold that he is not Gova Pishnai B'milva, that the Bechor, the firstborn, would not collect a double portion in a loan that's collected by the heirs, even if their collection was a land collection, because Shibuda is not the Raisa, and therefore it's not considered Bechol Asher Yimotzei Lo. The land that's collected is not viewed, according to Rava personally, as if it were in the possession of the father at the time of his death. We continue in the Gemara, even though we've put a slash mark, we're still going to be in the general topic of Shibuda. However, the reason we have a slash mark is to indicate that the ensuing Gemara is not directly related to the logical flow of discussion that we have been involved with till this point. In the outside margin, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. We have the house form. This indicates a Machlokes B'inyan Milva Alpeh Uvyoso Miyorshin Ulukuchos. We're going to see a controversy between, on the one side, Rav and Shmuel, and you see them as featured as number one in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. And a few lines later, you see Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish taking another side, holding differently than Rav Shmuel. We've also added an additional marking, the double underline, featuring the expressions Shibuda, either Doraisa or Derabbanan. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Shmuel, the Amri Chervayo, they both say Milva al Peh, an oral debt, Eino Yugoiva Loi Min HaYorshim VeLoi Min HaLekuchos. The lender cannot turn to the heirs, nor can he, the lender, turn to the subsequent purchasers. Mai taima. Why is there this limitation? Because Shibuda lav doraisa. The concept of a lien on one's properties is not a Torah concept. Hence, it's very limited in its scope, and therefore the collection cannot be made from Yorshim nor Lekuchos. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Dami Travayu, they both say Milval Peh, an oral agreement, Goive, Bein Min HaYorshin Ubein Min HaLekuchos, that even an oral agreement can turn to the heirs of the borrower and can turn to those who purchase property from the borrower and ask for collection. My time, Shibuda de Oraisa. Mesve. The Gemara will be asking here on Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel, just to review, said that Shibudo Lav Doraisa. We have the following story that's encapsulated in this Tanaic source, and you can see it's a Tanaic source by virtue of the frame around the next few lines. In our marking system, we frame off Tanaic sources so as to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara. HaChoyfer Bor Bushus HaRavim. We have someone digging a pit in a public area. V'nofal olav shor v'haragoi. And a passerby ox fell on the pit digger and killed the pit digger, killed the chofer. Potter, the owner of the animal, is exempt from any financial payments. V'lo oid elo sh'im meis hashor. Not only is the owner of the animal exempt from financial payments to the family of the deceased, but furthermore, if the animal died in the fall, Yorshe Baal Habor Chayovin L'Shalem Demei Shor L'Balov, the heirs of the digger are obligated to compensate the owners of the animal. We see here no written financial obligation. We see a milva al peh. We see an obligation that's not written. We'll classify it as milva al peh, and we see the milva al peh being collected from the yorshim. What we've dashed underline highlights this. Yorshe, the heirs, are chayav l'shalem. What did Rav and Shmuel say about this? They said that something that's al peh is not gove min hayorshim. We've added in the markings a little asterisk to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, opposite this line we just read, which indicates Yorshim are Chayav L'Shalem, and above, you'll notice an asterisk, opposite the line in which we've also dashed underlined the word Yorshim, where Rav and Shmuel said, Eino Gova from Yorshim. So you can see very easily the point of question. Omar Rav Ilah, Omar Rav, in trying to resolve this problem, Rav Ilah says in the name of Rav. Rav, by the way, was one of the parties on which this question was being asked. So Rav Ilah offers an explanation. B'sha'omad bedin. In the case of the bor, where the heirs of the Baal HaBor, of the digger, are chayev to compensate, it's because the digger stood up in a court of law regarding this matter, and a court ruling is considered like a milva bishtar. It has the strength, or creates awareness, if you will, as if it were a written debt. The Gemara asks, what do you mean he stood up in a court of law? Harago katani. In this story, we saw that the digger died. He was killed. Omar Rav Ado bar Avo she'asoi trefo. The term harago meant not that he was literally killed, but that he was made deathly ill. He was made into a trefa, where he had internal organ damage, thereby causing him to die earlier. However, he was oymed bedin before he actually died. Before yitzias neshama, he was oymed bedin. And that's why the yorshim are chayav to pay. The Gemara asks, V'ho Omar Rav Nachman Toni Tana Meis V'Kovro. There are other girsos that say, instead of Toni Tana, Toni Chago. Nevertheless, Rav Nachman says that it was taught in a source, Meis, that the digger died, V'Kovro, and was buried. In other words, the shor pushed him into this bor, and he was buried in the depths of this bor. So, what's this whole story about standing in a court of law and he was made merely into a trefa? The Gemara answers, Hosam diyasvi dayoni apumo debiro v'chayvuhu. It just so happened that in the case featured in this Tanaic source is that when this incident took place and the man was shoved into the bor, there were three judges sitting there witnessing this event, and at that point, before he actually died, it might be a matter of a few seconds even, but before he actually died, they ruled that the digger is chayev to pay for the shor and it, for the damages or the value of the shor. So as a result of that, it becomes a type of milva bishtar and not a milva alpeh, and only because of that, collection is made from the heirs. Omar Rav Papa, Hilchasa, milva alpeh, we're at the top of Kuf Ayin Vov Omid Aleph, where Rav Papa rules that a milva alpeh goive min hayorshim v'eino goive min halakuchos. He makes 2 points, and the Gemara will explain this. This, by the way, is an approach that is different than that we've seen till now. We saw Rav and Shmuel both saying that milva alpeh collects from neither group. We saw Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish saying that a milva alpeh collects from both groups. Here, Rav Papa comes to rule that a milva alpeh collects from one group and not the other. Collects from the heirs, does not collect from purchasers. Goive min hayorshim, Gemara now explains this, and you can see we've employed the aleph and beis markings again to correspond to the introduction of these two halachas. So we say aleph is goive min hayorshim kedei shelo tino deles bifnei lovin. Oral debts are able to collect from the heirs so as to create more opportunities for borrowers to find funds to borrow. Because if, as we said before, if lenders feel that they will not be able to collect their money, namely if the borrower dies, he'll be at a loss, so people will hesitate to extend loans. Therefore, the halacha recognizes this need to make monies available to borrowers. So we say that the lenders are able to collect from the heirs of the borrower in the event he dies. However, the eino goivim in alakuchos, oral debts cannot collect from purchasers, because in this case we have a counter financial consideration that overrules, and that is to protect commerce and to protect, in this case, purchasers who purchase in a state of unawareness and legitimate unawareness from someone who actually owes money, but they were not aware of it. The less they call it, because oral debts do not create a cold public awareness. So as to protect them, we say that milva alpeh is eino goivim min halakuchos. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.